We have completed the first limb of the Yoga of Perfection in studying in depth the role of equality. The second limb is the power of the instruments. The question of either the instruments or the power of the instruments does not arise at all in most of the traditional lines of yoga, which do not call upon man to uplift or to perfect this world, because according to their approach, the world, if it is not a total falsehood, is an inferior grade of reality which loses its significance once one attains to a higher level of consciousness. But in this yoga, the integral yoga, where we accept the world as real as the divine towards which we are moving, the call is for action, action for a progressive perfection, perfection of ourselves, and through our perfection, the perfection of the society and the perfection of life on earth. Starting with the individual, it is the instruments that are to be readied for any spiritual action, any spiritual program to be worked out through us or by us. It is the instruments through which we function that have to be purified and raised to their optimum level of efficiency. If the instruments are flawed, certainly the work is going to be flawed. The aim of this part of the Yoga of Perfection is not only to purify the instruments, but to raise the power of the instruments to their maximum. And what are these instruments? The instruments are obviously the intelligence, the heart, the vital mind, and the body, physical body. All of these are in varying states of being, of consciousness. They have to be put into the right condition so that they function at their highest level when we work. And this work, as we will see later on, is not merely external work, but even internal. Let us start with the body, the physical body, for instance. Whoever is doing yoga, trying for spiritual consciousness, knows that anything that he receives, it has a certain effect on the physical body. And the very fact that the body receives the vibrations of the higher consciousness, it has its results around the individual. So the state of the body determines to a certain extent not only the state of reception of what one gains from above or from within, but also in the spiritual radiation of what is received. The body has its natural limitations. In addition to these limitations, the body has its own habits. Habits which tend to pull down the consciousness, which tend to limit the sensitivity of the body, or oppose the tendency to go within or go above, upwards, by a pull always downwards. The pull from the subconscious, the pull from the inconscient, they must act through the physical body. So apart from its natural limitations, the body at a certain level is a storehouse of certain habits, regressive habits, which pull down, exert a constant pull on the being which aspires to go beyond. The only way to rectify this situation is, even as we want to have a new mind, a new heart, a new life energy, we are also to have, in a certain sense, a new body. A new body in this sense, that the body begins to function differently, react in a new way, receive in a new way. The physical body cannot be dissolved, and there is no known alchemic process by which we can change the body where it is into a totally new form with new capacities. That is in the realm of womb of the future. But as things stand, to create a new body means, in this context, to introduce and to get the body to accept, to act and react in a new way, not on the past habits, but in response to new urges, new pressures from the mind, from the will. One starts by silently exerting a mental will towards this change. The mind certainly knows how the body has to react by self-study, by self-observation. One knows precisely where the body fails to support the yogic action. Knowing it, one has to exert the will with discrimination, with vigilance, so that it learns new habits, displacing the old ones. And the first step in this direction is to teach the body an entire passivity, not to obstruct, not to oppose, but to hold itself in a passive poise, so that what comes from above or what emerges from within is received just as it comes. But this passivity alone is not enough. The body also has to learn to give positive responses. At present, what is happening is that instead of responding rightly to the pressures, to the higher movement, to the movements from above, of the higher consciousness. The body interferes with its habits and dilutes what comes, responds in a half-hearted manner, and as Sri Aurobindo puts it graphically, the music of this harp of God is interfered with by the physical body. The body refuses to respond with the right notes, so that the music that wants to express itself has to admit into it certain inferior notes and allow a certain dilution, a deformation to take place. It is a part of the seeker of this path to reverse the process by which the body responds with the thrill, the right vibrations, to the tune that is set from above. The body must contribute to the fuller orchestration. And that, by that process, the music that God intends acquires a solid richness. We said control, exert a control over the body, the mental will, but that's not enough. We begin with that. We know the limitations of mental will also, and once the full capacity of the mental will is used, and we find the mental will cannot do further, then the mental will has to yield to a still higher will, the will of the spirit, the will of the soul, ultimately the will of the supramental. But to that we come later on. As the higher will, the will higher than the mental, starts exerting itself, the body has to acquire the necessary strength to sustain the action of this higher will with its attendant force. The normal body is not able to hold, much less sustain the action. The body needs to be prepared, the body needs to be acclimatized to higher and still higher charges of the spiritual will, so that it may not spill what comes, it may not shake and get restless and render the higher action ineffective or less effective. This capacity to hold without shaking, that is a thing that must be acquired if we means to get the body to cooperate in the integral fulfillment. There is a classic phrase in the Veda where they speak of how an unbaked jar splits asunder when the divine ecstasy, the divine beverage is poured into it, the delight, what they call the soma. Unless the clay has been heated and subjected to the proper culturing and has been made to acquire the right consistency, it cannot hold the inpouring of the divine delight. So this is an unbaked jar. That is a classic example of one who somehow opens himself to the higher forces of yoga without preparing himself at the physical level. There is either a big illness, an accident, or mental derangement. Secondly, as the body is being built up, it loses the old habit of getting fatigued. Fatigue is a sign that the body is unable to cope up with the situation. Either it has been overworked or it is not accustomed to respond in the manner that is expected of it. When the body stops getting fatigued, it is a sign that the body is picking up, that the body is learning the new habits, the new ways. So each part of the body must be worked upon, not only to make it physically strong, but capable of holding, sustaining, and enduring the higher action without fatigue. And Sri Aurobindo emphasizes that it is not muscular strength, it is not a physical force after all that decides things. Whatever may be the fact, when we live the normal life full of grossness, once one takes to spiritual life of this conception, the energy that is required, or that the higher consciousness pours into the physical body, is not the outer energies with which we are familiar, the kind of energies that we can get by physical exercise, proper food and all that. But there is around us a sea of life force, prana shakti as they call it in Indian tradition, which really sustains the physical energies. The physical energies are fed by the subtle life energies. The currents of prana, the currents of life force, it is they which keep the physical energies moving and alive. It is one of the aims of yoga to tap this reservoir of life force in the universe. The more one is able to draw. Normally, the body has its a certain balance. It receives some things, and what it cannot hold, it just does not receive. The outer life energies, they try to get in, but when they find that the body is reluctant, they just don't enter. But it is the part, it is the work, in the early part of sadhana of many of the seekers in the traditional yogas, to open channels of communication with the surrounding life force, prana shakti. Those who don't do yoga, they do it by increasing the physical energies and the demand of the physical energies on the life force through exercise and all normal, usual physical means. But in yogas like the Hatha Yoga or the Raja Yoga. They have special measures of asanas, disciplines of pranayama, by which a new balance is sought to be established between the physical body and the life energies. More and more energies from the sea of life are drawn in, so much so that the physical energies form only the last terminal of the life energies. The more one draws inside oneself these energies, keeps them, and arrives at a certain self-adjusting balance between one's own self and the outer life energies, one gets more control over the body. The body obeys the needs and the demands of the life force. But this is only a step. As long as you depend upon physical means like breathing or postures to facilitate the entry of the life energies, holding them through certain processes of pranayama and all that, the gain will be only limited. One may live long, one may be able to work more, exert oneself, cure oneself of certain diseases which are originated in lack of sufficient vital force, but nothing more beyond that. Subtler means have to be learned to draw in these life energies. And that is only when you exceed the mental will and open to the action of the spiritual and the supreme willpower that the universal prana is spontaneously tapped and brought in. The supreme, the higher will, knows precisely the quantum of the life energy that is required, and it draws upon it. This is what Mother meant when she once said that she does not depend upon physical food, but it is the universal prana, the life energy, that feed her. She draws upon them. But she did take the minimum quantity of physical food, liquid or solid or semi-solid, just to respect the law, material law of the physical body. Because even a divine person, a supremely advanced person in consciousness, respects the laws of the environment, laws of creation, till those laws are changed. Sri Aurobindo explained in his letters how even an avatar will not break the rules of the game unless he first changes the rules. He changes the rules, establishes new rules, and in observing the new rules alone, the old rules are given the go-by. This is incidental. But that's not the ultimate. To draw the universal life energies is not everything. That also is a step, though a great step. Because even the universal life energy has certain limitations. The universe is in the triple formula of ignorance as things stand. So the limitations of this cosmic ignorance still apply to the life force. It is as we approach the Gnostic levels, the Gnostic will, the higher will approaching the Gnostic, it draws from still higher levels. There is, Sri Aurobindo points out, what is called a supramental life force, which is not subject to the limitations of the present universal life force. And when the supramental will is made active and made to function in ourselves, that supramental pranic shakti is set into action in ourselves. But all this we accept because someone who has this experience, who has this realization, says that all these things are there. We must have that faith. Faith in the knowledge that is given, faith in the capacity of the body to change, to receive and to sustain the action of the progressively higher and higher forms of the consciousness force. We start with this faith. Man is a mental being and the faith is first mental. But it is always combated by the opposite faith. The body protests. The life, the vital also shows its incapacity to go beyond a certain level. It throws doubts. The physical mind also has its own doubts. So this obstinate habit of doubting the ability of the body to hold and sustain, the ability of the mind and the other instruments to change and recast themselves, this is a constant tussle that is going on between the higher will and the will of inconscience. For a long time, this struggle continues. And there must be the faith, an indomitable and unconquerable faith in the infinite capacity of the life force to achieve what the will wants. Because after all, what is life force? Life force is a projection in the universe, material universe, of what is consciousness force. Consciousness as force on its own higher levels of Satchidananda. So somewhere there is the core of consciousness, and this consciousness is illimitable. The Vedic mystics attach great importance to this life force that is being summoned, that is being naturalized and put into operation. They call it the vehicle of the soul. Life force is called a horse, a steed, symbolically, just as cow stands for light, knowledge. The horse stands in the Veda for power, for life energies. They are the vehicles of the soul. And For the soul to arrive at its goal, the stronger the vehicle, the more ample the vehicle, the better it is. So far we have spoken of the normal life energy flows to the physical. Then there is another form of prana, life energy, that is called the psychic prana. In other words, the energies that are yoked to the desire soul. Here also, we must note that what pertains to the desire soul is not all that pertains to it is not necessarily evil, not necessarily something to be excised and cast away. This psychic prana is the stuff of which much that we admire in men, character, personality, and so on, these are constituted. The desire soul has its own right. There is something in our being which has a right to possess and to enjoy. But this right is ill-used by the ego and the desire formation organized around the ego. The yogin has to take steps to purify this life energy by eliminating as far as possible the movements of ego and the crude desires. The right of the soul to possess and enjoy comes into its own only when this purification has been effected. It is not enough that one is pure. A negative purity is not enough. One must cultivate. And in fact, once one gets purified and loosens oneself from the hold of this desire and ego, there comes forward a natural felicity, a certain gladness and lightness that comes from the psychic being. Wherever the psychic is there, these things, lightness, felicity, joy, a sweetness, these are all there. But they are veiled by the crudities of our normal desire self, desire soul. Once these things are removed, these gladness, felicity, sweetness, they come to the fore. And the yogin is asked to cultivate, to stamp his movements with a minimum of equality. No undue joy when things are done, no depression at all when things are not. There has to be a certain equanimity. It is only in conditions of equanimity that the psychic prana can come to its optimum, and these things that I said are the qualities of the soul can begin to emerge. The physical prana, the life force, the psychic prana, and then comes the chitta. Chitta is the emotional and the pure psychic being. When I spoke of this desire being, this pure psychic being is free from the least shadow of vital or the lower vital desire. Here again, this chitta, or the emotional and the pure psychic stuff in us, it has to be subjected to a certain purification and processed through equality. Knowledge, in the measure in which our knowledge grows, in the measure in which we impose a harmonizing will on the different parts of the being through this citta, we make the higher working possible. We have to note that in each person there are two powers, two aspects. One is the aspect of calm, equality, silence. The other is one of force, strength. Both these, the dynamic and the enlightened static, they have to be harmonized. Each one has to recognize what is the hour of the other and what is its own moment. They can't struggle among themselves. So these two have to work in harmony, what Sri Aurobindo calls the Saumya and the Raudra. If we are so made, or allow ourselves to be so made, that we will only be calm and quiet and enjoy the felicity, not for us is the integral perfection. If we are only impetuous, dynamic, without knowing something of peace, something of equality or equanimity, for us also the integral perfection is not meant. We must recognize the claims of both, harmonize them, and only then the basis is laid for the supreme perfection. And thereafter, Sri Aurobindo speaks of faith not only in our capacities, not only in our destiny, not only in the existence of the reality, but faith in the universe, that there is a universal good. All is moving towards something good. There is, at the base of all, there is a delight, there is an ananda. God enjoys this creation, and in the measure in which we leave behind our human imperfections and grow into the divine nature, we also enjoy the play of this manifestation. And that is essentially that one of the planks of the tantric philosophy. This faith in the universal good, that all that happens is moving towards something. We may not have the vision to see, but not to be disheartened, not to allow ourselves to be overpowered by negative thinking, but to seek, to know and experience what is the purpose for which all these things, evil, indifferent, or what people call good, contribute, towards what are they moving. If we have that faith that the divine is there in the universe, nothing can happen ultimately without his will, and we have the aspiration to reach up to this will and learn this language, learn how to tune ourselves to the Supreme's will in the universe, the universe represents a totally different picture than what it normally does. And once this faith is there in the universal good, our capacity to love increases boundlessly. In everyone there is the bud of love. How far it blossoms, it depends upon his evolution. For one who believes that there is a good, universal good, that God is there, the divine presence is there everywhere, there is a spontaneous movement of love. And this movement spreads overspreads and ultimately overpowers the individual. So he himself becomes only a sea of love. Last, there is the buddhi, the intelligent will. That too has to be subjected to the discipline of purity, not insisting upon its own notions, own conclusions, own processes, but to convert itself into a clear mirror, a reflector of the higher knowledge. When the mental buddhi understands the will and intelligence, accept this role and consent to do no more than reflect the higher knowledge, function in a certain flexibility, not hesitating to give up their own likes and prejudices and dislikes, the buddhi too starts participating in this movement of the purification and the perfection of the instruments. All these instruments have to be harmonized. It is a discipline, a whole time discipline in itself, and it is there that the awakened mind has to play a great role. We have to be watching ourselves. The mind has to watch itself, watch its the various movements in the system, acquire more and more knowledge of the self. And what we know, we have to practice. And this practice is the sadhana, is the abhyasa, is the yoga. Thus, from the physical body up to the higher will, in the highest levels of the mind that we have attained, all these instruments tied up with each other, they have to be processed through purification, equality, faith, a certain psychic gladness, capacity for love, passivity, when passivity is the need, dynamism, when that is the call.
There was a question about the early part of the chapter where you describe the physical and not the physical, and the relationship between that and the component of the universal. What I want to know is the vehicle or the means by which that comes into the physical body. Is that focused on the subtle physical?
Yes. Subtle physical. We have around our physical body a subtle physical envelope. So that is the channel through which the universal life energies flow into us or are checked. When this subtle physical envelope is weak for any reason, then those energies can't come in. And when, how does the subtle physical envelope get weak? Sri Aurobindo explained once in the course of a letter that our own movements of depression, jealousy, defeatism, negative movements, negative psychological movements, they depress the envelope, so that not only the healthy currents of life can't come in, but diseases, illnesses, they easily get through. So he explained that TB, for instance, is more a disease, psychological disease, because the origin, whatever may be the subsequent physical development, the origin is long periods of depression, mental depression. They act as an invitation to these deficiency diseases. The subtle envelope gets shrunk, weak, but movements of cheerfulness, movements of joy, whether that joy is meritful or sinful is another matter. See, they have an effect of strengthening the subtle physical envelope. From that point of view, positive movements, confidence, faith, dynamism, these build up a powerful envelope which attracts life energies, keeps out the inferior energies. So it is this subtle physical envelope, what the theosophists call the astral envelope, that plays the great role in this relation.
What is personality?
Personality. Personality is a formation put forward by the soul which is inside on the surface through the instrumentality of mind, life, body. The soul comes with a certain experience. It wants to gain another kind of experience. So it puts in those instruments in the front, mind, life and body, certain elements from its own stuff which are favorable for the kind of experience that it wants. In the beginning, they are just undeveloped. But as one grows, these elements which have been put there, they start getting shape. And that is called a formation put forward by the soul to gain the experience that it wants. That is personality. So the mold of the personality, the type of the personality is determined by the will of the soul. Though it may happen that this natural personality of the soul may be displaced in the course of life by interference by the ego, interference by the desire self, and a false personality may displace the right personality. Yoga is intended to dissipate the false personality so that the true typal personality comes forward. And we have seen such a change in many lives. People change their character. People change their very, even their expression of face once they take to the inner life, which leaves behind the pseudo-personality. But the personality is only an instrument, an instrumental formation put forward by the soul.
See, you said about chit, the emotional, the pure psychic being,
yes,
which is free from lower vital forces. Then what is the relation of chit in the tradition? You know, chit,
chit in the Indian, the Patanjali's yoga and other systems based upon it, just means the stuff of consciousness, the stuff of awareness. It includes the whole system. That stuff may be in the mind, may be in the emotions, may be in the life force, all that is bundled together as chitta. But Sri Aurobindo does not go that far. He says chitta is really the stuff of mental consciousness. He confines it to the mind, and the emotional being. The psychic is behind the emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Below that it does not flow. According to Patanjali and all that, even the vital stuff is the chitta. No, the higher consciousness brings with it its appropriate energies. Whether we are in a position to condition to receive and hold them is another matter. But consciousness brings with it the necessary force. Yes. By observation, making mistakes, learning things. This is what Sri Aurobindo says, self-observation, self-knowledge, self-modification. And the last said that these things have to be there at every step. The mind has to be observant, the mind has to know and study, the mind has to exert the will for change. And this is the practice, the yogic sadhana that is demanded of the seeker in this part of the yoga of self-perfection.